A number of years ago in Alabama, I was standing in a park, and it was a beautiful summer day, green grass everywhere, and it was bright and sunny. There were a number of trees that provided shade, but, you know, it was just still kind of sticky and hot, the way it gets in the humid south. It's kind of like that here. We were walking around this beautiful park, and it was mostly empty except for some protesters who were there in the park on behalf of PETA. And if you're wondering, like, there's no tie-in there. There's no reason that they were there. But this is where PETA was working at this given point. There were really no other people in the park. There weren't joggers. There weren't people sitting there playing chess. It was just empty. It was large. There was a lot of space that you could walk around. And so many of us, many of the 30 or 40 people who were there, split off, you know, in groups of two or three. But some people went alone. I went alone the first time. And I just walked, mostly on the trail, sometimes on the grass. This was Kelly Ingram Park. And in that park, there are these sculptures there, magnificent sculptures. And I say that because I'm not so great at art, but these are something to behold. The sculptures, most often, are real-life images of dogs and children. So you might think for a moment, you might hope, in this beautiful park, gorgeous day, sunny, sun shining everywhere, that this would be a great image, but instead it's like a little 4 or 5 year old black girl being pulled at with a huge German shepherd with teeth. And so I was probably, I don't know, 17, 18, 19, 20 at the time, put my hand in the dog's mouth, and you could feel the jagged edges of the teeth. That's how good the sculpture was. It was amazing, and it was scary, and I hated it. It made me sick. That's where I saw the fire. That's where I saw the burning bush, at least one of the first times. It was the sun shining in a park where kids should have been playing, but instead, all around were ghosts, memories of children being hunted by dogs. So where have you seen the burning bush, the fire? Beauty of the universe is all around. Beauty has come to us in many days of our lives in many ways. In each child, there is beauty. We've seen the full force of soul in every single newborn. So you've seen it somewhere. You've heard it call to you. Where have you seen the bush on fire? Is it possible that like Moses or like Jonah that I spoke of weeks before or like me, is it possible that you probably said, nah, somebody else can do it. Someone else can extinguish that burning bush and return that call. I'm not up for that. Have you tried my brother Aaron or the other church? That's what speaks to me in some part about at least the Moses reading. And I often like the Moses story. In fact, I've written another sermon where I imagine what it's like for Moses. And he just wants to do anything other than try to free people. But see, he has a sense of freedom. And so he has to offer it to others. And when I stood in that park, in Kelly Ingram Park, I had a similar sort of realization. And one of the things that's difficult as we think back to Passover and Easter, the time that we're approaching, as we hear the words of Ruth and Naomi and Moses, is to imagine what it's like to struggle with freedom. Because most of us, at least in large ways, do not struggle with freedom. Not on a global way, not on a macro way. We may have some interpersonal freedom, some ways that we feel trapped in our jobs, our relationships, in addiction, in cycles of poverty or abuse. We may feel not free to believe whatever it is or to be who we are, and we're starting to edge out of that to walk into new places. But mostly, people who are in this room, in this country, have senses of freedom. And it's a paradox that we struggle with, that we think about freedom and liberty so often, but it's hard to really grasp because we don't know what it's like when it's been taken away. The song, Power of Two, that I'm so grateful that Bea and Jen offered, is a song that reminds me to wrestle with that in particular, because freedom comes to mind in relationships, and in relationships beyond just dating and lovers and partnership, but even in church relationships. We choose to be with one another. At least in this church, we're not forced to be, and so there is a paradox there. We give up some part of ourselves thinking that it's worth it to learn or to change or to be in relationship with the other. We mix all of this together, and it's hard to figure it out, but eventually we learn that the sum of the parts is greater than anything we could accomplish on our own. This paradox that freedom isn't always the best thing, that sometimes being bound, whether it's bound in covenant with a partner in a relationship or with children or with our work or with our religious community, that being bound to something gives us the freedom we seek. Sarah York, a UU minister, has this great poem entitled Paradox. She writes of a pet that she and her family got. She says, "We named the kitten that we got Puppy Cat," which fits her contradictory nature. She follows us around like a puppy with no apparent physical needs. She cries for attention. She just wants to chat and demand some sign that we are listening. If we try to pick her up, however, like a cat, she protests. "Keep close and pet me," she says, "but don't hold me. I want to be free." The needs for love and freedom create ambivalence in most of us. Like Puppy Cat, we send out double messages. Love me, but do not intrude upon my space. I want to be close, but I'm afraid of being hurt. I need you, but I want to be independent. And so on. We live on the boundary of so many inner contradictions. Sarah goes on to say that we can create all sorts of lists of these contradictions, but there's a difference, really, between ambivalence and paradox. In ambivalence, we are torn, our feelings conflict. But in paradox, we accept and admit those tensions. In ambivalence, we have difficulty making commitments and decisions. We convey double messages all the time to others. But in paradox, we admit our uncertainties and our reservations, and we act wholeheartedly, committing ourselves to our experiences. She ends by saying, maybe the main difference is that in paradox, we are willing to make commitments when all we can ever hope for is partial knowledge and an uncertain outcome. In many ways, that's what life is. All we can ever achieve is partial knowledge and an uncertain outcome. At least that's the religious teaching of this type church. Unitarian Universalism is founded on this principle of freedom and the paradox that we come together building something that we all give up some part of our freedom for. It's also part of the paradox that we will never have all of the answers, but we still want to keep asking questions, learning, listening to one another's stories so that we can know more how we are to be, so that we can change and grow, and in so doing, help others. While it's true that we are so removed from the struggle of freedom often in our own lives, we are aware that there are others who face it around the world. And frankly, it's not that far removed from us. Thousands of years ago, Jews in Egypt were in slavery, and Moses had to help them. Hundreds of years ago, here in America, was the same problem. Human trafficking still exists around the world. We may be removed from fearing legal repercussion for believing whatever it is we religiously believe, but how many of us get weird looks when we talk about being a UU at our family gatherings, or at work, or whatever? It's not a legal repercussion, but there's some tension. We may be removed from segregation and Jim Crow, but even in our own backyards, freedom is taken away in the guise of security, against protecting us against someone. We must not look away when we see a bush on fire, when there are people being held captive. Instead, we must look toward them to see how we can help free them, knowing that even in their freedom, they may not choose to be there with us and for us. There's an old movie, I think from the 80s. I'm not great with movies. Do you all remember Harry? Maybe it was a TV show even. Harry and the Hendersons? Yeah. So you remember this whole like plot line that, so Harry and the Hendersons, Harry's this big Chewbacca-like monster. And the Hendersons are this family. John Lithgow's the dad. And all I remember is some plot that, you know, Harry has to go back into the woods because otherwise I think he'll be captured and made fun of. I don't know. But they can't be together. And they formed this bond. And so the father, John Lithgow, who's a great actor, just tries to hurt Harry to send him back because, you know, we can't be together. Imagine there are so many times in our lives where there are people who have hurt us and we've thought, wait, didn't you love me 2 minutes ago? What are you doing? Are you pushing me away because you love me? It's true that there are times that people do this, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Perhaps it's part of that fear that comes up in the paradox of relationship, that if we are truly open to one another, if we're truly open and free, I will be hurt. It's the whole paradox. I need you, but don't get too close. I want you to be with me, but I don't want to get hurt. The problem with freedom is that in order for us to really enjoy, to get the good taste out of the richness of the blackberries that is love and freedom, we've got to go for it. We've got to take it all and maybe lose something along the way. Sarah York, the same minister I mentioned a few minutes ago, writes this, "Freedom means risk. It is safer to be in bondage," she says. "Freedom means pursuing a dream of a promised land that we may never reach." It is that time of year for Passover, for Easter, for spring to be reborn, hopefully one day. And so often in our lives, we wonder, are we ever going to get there? Will that promised land occur, or are we just lost in the desert? Here in this church, we come together to sit with one another, not to answer the question, not to say, yes, I know for a fact you'll get there, and it's in the afterlife, if only you believe, because we don't know that to be true. We come together as a church not to give false love, not to just be kind to one another, but to love even in the hard times, to give the love of true freedom that says, be who you are, and in being yourself, that's the beauty that the divine has placed on this earth. That's harder sometimes than we imagine. And yet each and every one of us has been called to open our eyes to that exact beauty, called to see that beauty and make it true in our lives, in our worlds, and in this church and beyond. In this community, we are guided not to be perfect and not to find a truth, but to love and connect, and to find truth, some pieces of it, with all the people in this world who would share it with us. Even those, believe it or not, who would restrict our freedom. That's a paradox. That we are to love those who do not love us. In this moment, I invite you to listen to the still small voice. You may have seen it ages ago. It may have been a burning bush. It may have been just an image, something calling to you that says the world needs you. Not your brother John. Not the other church down the street. Not someone else. Not a half-hearted you, but you. What is it if you had the freedom to do anything in the world, to answer life's great call? What would you do? And I invite you to think of that and to see the people around you as the support. The people who are here to support you and say, we are here for you and with you no matter your path. We may not reach a promised land together. Our promised land may not be the same, but we love you nonetheless.